ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hey, Tegan Taylor here from Life Matters. When you think of grandparents, what comes to mind? Maybe a secret stash of lollies? Well, grandparents aren't just spoiling the grandkids anymore. They're raising them and paying the bills. This July on Radio National, The Grandparent Trap explores the joys and pressures of being a modern grandparent. The Grandparent Trap and much more on Life Matters. Search for Life Matters on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to ABC Rewind. Hilary Harper here to bring you a magical series presented by Richard Feidler from the Conversations podcast. About a decade ago, Richard and his friend, the writer Kari Gislason, travelled to Kari's birth country, Iceland, to discover the sagas, ancient tales of Viking love, war, honour and humanity. But there's another kind of connected reason for their visit to the wildly beautiful island. They're trying to solve a mystery in Kari's family history. Here's Richard.
My friend Kari is a Viking. Last year, he told me he was going to Iceland. I said I was coming with him. Kari Gislason is an author and an academic. We've been friends for some years. He lives around the corner from me, and our families hang out together. Kari even looks the part of a Viking. He doesn't have a beard or wear animal skins, but he is 6'4", and he struggles to get comfortable while flying in an economy seat. Have you ever killed anyone with your bare hands?
Not yet, Richard.
Kari was born in Iceland, and he's lived there for long stretches of his life. As a young man, he drifted away, but he found his way back through the sagas of Iceland, the family stories of the first Icelanders from the Viking Age.
The sagas are some of the best stories ever written. This was a rich culture that left no real material artifacts. There are no grand buildings, there are no ruins. Everything disappeared, except the stories.
They're a way of finding ourselves right into the mind of a Viking man and a Viking woman.
I totally believe that. I think we can meet the Vikings in these stories.
These are tales of blood feuds and dangerous women. There are fugitives and warrior poets, and men and women, brothers and sisters, who are forced to kill the ones they love the most. So Kari and I came up with this plan. We would go to Iceland, and we would tell the stories of four Viking men and women. And we'd do this in the locations where these stories actually happened. We would travel across Iceland, hiking into fields and across rocky fjords and farms, to speak the words of Kari's Viking ancestors into the stones and streams of Iceland. And there's something else. Another much more personal reason to go to the land of the sagas. Kari only ever met his Icelandic father four times in his life. And on their last meeting, he gave Kari something. A gift that was a name that was a mystery.
No one ever knew who my father was. Mum had made a promise to my father when she first fell pregnant. He asked her to never reveal who he was. He was a married man. He had five children. It was a small country where everyone knew everyone's business. But he did ask her to protect his identity for the sake of his family life.
So when you say he wanted her to protect his identity, the only way he could do that was by concealing your identity.
Indeed. And Mum didn't write any name down on the birth certificate. She didn't want to reveal him, but then again, she didn't want to invent a different name. And it took me 27 years to break the secret that my mother had kept. In the end, it fell to me to decide that I wanted the world to know who my real father was. And when I was 27, I wrote to my siblings, my father's children that he'd had with his wife before I was born. And I introduced myself to them in a letter, and they welcomed me into the family. And on the day that I met my father for the first time after writing to them, he said to me, "Kaori, what are you doing with your life?" I said, "Well, I'm in literary studies. I'd like to be a writer." He said, "Ah, that makes sense." "Oh, why?" "You know you're related to Snorri Sturluson, don't you?"
Snorri Sturluson. Snorri Sturluson is only the most famous Icelander who ever lived. He's like their Shakespeare and George Washington, all rolled into one. A medieval Icelandic statesman, poet, and author.
Snorri was a saga author who had died in 1241.
But is it true that Kari is actually descended from Iceland's greatest literary figure, the great man of the sagas? Well, the answer is, we just don't know. Kari hasn't been able to find out. There's a roadblock. That's because Kari has no official connection to his father through the birth certificate.
Because of the way that the genealogical trees are documented, I haven't yet been able to find out for sure whether I am related to Snorri or not.
So that right there became our ulterior motive for going to Iceland, to find out if what Kari's father told him is actually true. To do this, we need to go to Iceland's vast genealogical database that connects today's Icelanders all the way back to their Viking ancestors. That way we can see if Kari really is directly descended from the greatest of the saga authors. And so we got on a plane to Iceland, the land of the sagas. Sagaland. Reykjavik, Iceland's capital, is a small city, just around 200,000 people, but it's pretty arty and kind of cool. The sagas are everywhere here. Translations of the sagas are front and centre in bookshops. There are images of saga heroes on posters and tea towels. Iceland Air's business class is even called Saga Class.
All these people would know the sagas. They get them at school. It's like Shakespeare for Icelanders.
We're in the Arni Magnusson Institute in Reykjavik. It's the place that stores the original saga documents. We've come to see Gudrun Nordahl.
I'm the director of the Institute. We are the custodians of the medieval manuscripts.
These are obviously really incredibly precious documents. Are they in some kind of, 10 miles underground in a nuclear-proof bunker or something, yeah. Gudrun? Have you got something like that?
Well, they have a bunker, you could say that. Yes, exactly. They're very important. Mm-hmm. They're our national culture, if you like.
How old were you when you were introduced to the sagas, Gudrun?
I was very young. I think I was just thinking this. I think I was probably about 10, 11 when I read my first sagas, but you were given a book and you said, try to read the saga, and you did.
The first saga story we want to tell is the story of a Viking man from the 10th century called
Gunnar of Hlíðarendi.
Gunnar could trace his line of ancestors deep into the Viking past.
There was a woman called Randveig.
She was the daughter of Sigfus,
son of Sigvatur.
She married Hámundur,
who was the son of Gunnar,
son of Baugr.
Hámundur's mother
was called Hrafnhildur,
daughter of Stórólfur,
son of Hængur,
was the brother of Hrafn, the law speaker.
Randveig
and Hámundur had a son. His name was Gunnar.
Gunnar was an Icelander. He went to Norway for a while, and then he returned to Iceland with wealth and honour. That summer, he came to the annual assembly at a place called
Thingvellir.
On paper, that reads like Thingvellir.
Thingvellir.
Thingvellir. Yeah, whatever, man. Thingvellir is a gorge. It's a rift forged by the rupture of tectonic plates. It's essentially the gap in the surface of the earth between Europe and North America. And when you walk into Thingvellir, you see these two slate-grey cliff walls on either side of you. And there's a stream with grassy banks and little sprays of summer flowers. It's a naturally grand and ceremonial place. And so in the Viking Age, Iceland's chieftains and farmers and their families would come here to Thingvellir each summer and make the laws of Iceland. It was a kind of parliament. Kári and I sat down in the place where one day, 1,000 years ago, Gunnar came into Thingvellir. And people couldn't stop looking at Gunnar because he seemed to have everything.
He was handsome, he could swim like a seal, he was a great swordsman, a bowman, he travelled widely, he was athletic. The saga says that he could jump as far backwards as he could forwards. And that he didn't mount his horse the way other men mounted their horses. He would run up behind it with his halberd and dig it into the dirt and project himself into the saddle. Gunnar has come back from Norway. He's wearing a beautiful cloak and he's done big things abroad. And he's walking through these rifts and he sees the most beautiful woman that he's ever seen. Her name is Hallgerð. And as soon as they see each other, something passes between them. They know that they want each other. Gunnar asks her to sit down with him. And he tells her about his travels. Eventually, he asks her, "Are you married?" And she says, "You can't possibly be interested in that." He says, "Well, what if I am?" She answers, "Then you should go and speak to my father and my uncle." When Gunnar went to see her father and her uncle, they said to him, "Gunnar, we like you. You're a good man. We don't think you should marry our daughter." She'd been married twice. She was married to a man she didn't love and who she'd been forced to marry. And when she expressed her displeasure to her foster father, he found a new resting place for his axe in the head of her husband. She then married a man that she did love. And when they had a falling out and Hallgerð was upset, against her wishes, her foster father once again found a new resting place for his axe. She'd lost two husbands, one she didn't mind losing, the other that she grieved. But Gunnar knew what he wanted. Something very basic had passed between them, and they needed each other. And against the advice of her kinsman, Gunnar married Hallgerð and took her back to his farm. It was never going to be easy, I don't think, for Hallgerð to settle in. Here was this new woman, and a rather proud one. And naturally enough, there was some resistance to her arrival. Gunnar's best friend, Njál, who was a lawyer, could tell that Hallgerð's arrival would not bring good luck to Gunnar of Hlíðarendi. But he invited Gunnar and Hallgerð to a feast to be held at Njál's farm. Gunnar and Hallgerð went to the dinner, but straight away there was a problem with the seating arrangements. Hallgerð wasn't given the seat of honour that she expected, and immediately there was animosity between Hallgerð and Njál's wife. The two women hated each other. They began their own duel, their own feud, and they conducted it first of all through their slaves. They had their slaves kill one another. But eventually the feud escalated until it got quite close to the level of Gunnar and Njál. The friends were able to stop it going too far, and for a moment there was some peace in the district. But Hallgerð had made her mark. And when a period of austerity began and there was a lack of supplies in the area, Gunnar went to visit one of the neighbouring farmers, a guy called Otkell, and asked him for provisions, for hay. He refused, and Hallgerð was furious. She sent
another slave to Otkell's farm and told him to raid the place, destroy what he could, and bring something back for her larder. He came back with cheese. The next time Gunnar had visitors, Hallgerð came out with this cheese and served it to his friends. And Gunnar reeled back and said, "Where did you get the cheese, Hallgerð?" She answered, "Don't concern yourself with domestic matters, Gunnar." He hit her across the face. She said, "I will remember that blow."
Gunnar's farm, Hlíðarendi, is about a day's ride on horseback from Þingvelli on the south coast of Iceland. Hlíðarendi means end of the slope, and it's on a very grassy hill that runs down to the plains.
What was happening in this area was that someone of Gunnar's standing was beginning to attract enemies, people who were jealous of him. And they began to band together. There was slander about Gunnar. People tried to bait him into fights. And eventually, a big fight broke out near here, near his farm. And Gunnar killed a number of his enemies. At the end of it, he turned to his brother and said, "Why do I find it harder to kill than other men do?" He was good at it, but he hated it. He consulted his best friend, the lawyer, Njál, on almost everything. And Njál gave him this piece of advice. He said, "Never kill twice in the same family." Gunnar replied, "I wouldn't do that." Njál said, "But if you do, you must accept the settlement that's made for you by men of goodwill." And Gunnar agreed. His enemies kept at him, and eventually Gunnar killed Otkell, the farmer who had refused him provisions. And when Otkell's son came after Gunnar, as he was honor bound to do, Gunnar was forced to kill him as well. And so, against his own nature, Gunnar had killed twice in the same family. And the matter was referred to the parliament, to Þingvellir, for arbitration and settlement. Gunnar wasn't really to blame for that attack and for that death. They had attacked him and provoked him constantly. But all the same, men of goodwill came up with this settlement. Gunnar had to go away for 3 years of exile, after which he could come back. And Njál said to him, "If you accept this settlement, you will prosper and you will live an honourable and long life in Iceland." And Gunnar agreed to it. He'd leave for 3 years with his brother. They rode down from here, from this farm, down the slope. But as he rode down, his horse tripped on something and Gunnar jumped off. He looked up at this field and said, "Fögur hlíðin. The slope is beautiful. I will not go." His brother was shocked and said, "Don't please your enemies by doing this. I can't stay with you in Iceland." But Gunnar insisted, and he rode back on his own to his farm. Hallgerð was very pleased that he was back. His enemies really now had to attack him. He'd broken the settlement, and the next move was theirs. They approached this farm, and they began their attack. Gunnar had a bow, and he was able to keep them at bay with it. He could kill with this weapon, and no one was going to get to him while he had it. They made one attack, and it failed. They made a second attack, where they tried to get in from the top, and Gunnar thrust his halberd up,
kept them out. And they were about to give up and were turning away from here when Gunnar spotted an arrow on the side of the roof. His mother said, "Don't grab it." But Gunnar thought it would be fun to humiliate his enemies with one of their own arrows. And so he put his arm out and reached for it. And as he did so, they saw the glint of a gold band on his arm and thought, if he needs one of our arrows, he must be in trouble. He's running out. And they turned back. This time they had a plan. They got rope and they put it around the roof and they heaved the roof off the place and began their attack from above. Gunnar still had his bow, but eventually the bowstring broke. He looked at Hallgerð and saw her long hair and said, "Hallgerð, lend me some of your hair. I need it to repair my bow." She said, "Does very much depend upon this?" He said, "My life depends upon it, Hallgerð." She answered, "In that case, let me remind you of that time you hit me. I refuse." After that, Gunnar had nothing to defend himself with. He was exposed. And they came in at him and they stabbed him with their swords and with their spears. And he was exhausted until finally he died here in front of Hallgerð.
That moment when Gunnar falls off his horse and he says,
"Fögur hlíðin, the slope is beautiful, I will not go."
That line is like the most famous line to Icelanders. Every Icelander knows that phrase.
Over the centuries, it's come to mean how important it is to love this country and to stay here for that love. Because it is a hard place to live. And I've always felt that if you want to stay here, you have to make a choice to stay here.
So, Kari, there's this moment in the saga where Gunnar hits Hallgerð for stealing the cheese. It's a really shocking moment. And in return, she refuses to give him that lock of hair for his bow. And so he dies. Why is she doing that? Is that punishment or revenge or what?
It's not punishment or revenge, I don't think. Hallgerð's honour is just as important as Gunnar's. And she protects it in that moment.
We're told that these are stories about real people who really lived in Iceland during the Viking Age. Who wrote this story down?
We don't know the author, but, most probably a cleric in the 13th century.
What do you think the author thinks of Hallgerð?
I think the author wants to hate her, but she comes out in her own defense in the saga too. And I think at the end of the day, he couldn't. She's too interesting.
You think the author wants us to disapprove of her?
Yeah.
But we end up liking her anyway, because I like her.
I like her too. I like her a lot. And I like her because, despite all the best efforts of this author, she comes through on her own terms.
So, what happens to Hallgerð after all that?
It seems that she retreats into a fairly miserable existence. She's condemned by Gunnar's mother for the choice she makes, and she lives under that condemnation for the rest of her life, and eventually ends up at Laugarnes, a small farm in modern-day Reykjavik. And that's where she dies.
People here in Iceland are obsessed with saga stories like the tale of Gunnar, because so many of them can trace their line of ancestry all the way back to those Vikings that are named in the stories. Now, earlier I mentioned that Kari was once told by his father that he might have a direct line of descent from the greatest of the Icelandic saga authors, Snorri Sturluson.
Was a saga author who had died in 1241.
But so far, he's been unable to find out whether it's true. The silences around Kari's family history have created an official roadblock for him when it comes to the genealogical record. And so while we're back here in Reykjavik, we're going to find out whether it's true, whether Kari really is connected to the great man of Iceland.
I want to know about a connection that I might have to a person who wrote works that I treasure and that Icelanders treasure still today. You know, Snorri is not an obscure medieval figure for Icelanders. He's one of the father figures of art and culture in a country that really, really values those things. And I value them. And so I am curious about this connection, even if I don't really know what it means to have a connection to someone in the past like this.
Is it a real connection if it goes back 10, 12 generations? Well, is that a real connection, though?
I don't know if it is. I mean, because between me and Snorri, there are no doubt murderers and farmers and decent folk who did nothing much with their lives.
Someone who worked in the Department of Land Tax. And,
yes, exactly. Yeah. And that naturally forms me as much as any other ancestor.
Okay, well, let me turn the question around the other way. If when we go there, we find that you are not his descendant, will you be disappointed?
Even though, logically speaking, I don't think I would lose anything, I would still have an attachment to him. What would be missing is that intimate connection that seems to be implied. And there is something very seductive about that. And maybe it's because of me being so far away. It becomes even more alluring.
So, is Kari related to the greatest of the Icelandic saga writers, Snorri Sturluson? You'll have to keep listening to find out. Next time, Kari tells us the great love story of Gudrun and the two men who were so captivated by her grace and dignity, they were prepared to sacrifice everything, even their friendship, for her love. And after making Sagaland, Richard and Kari couldn't keep away from this territory, so they created another podcast series called Viking Lives, a history of the Vikings told through a chain of biographies of Norse women and men. You'll find it on your favourite podcast app. Off the back of this audio series, Richard and Kari co-wrote an award-winning book, also called Sagaland, The Island of Stories at the Edge of the World. Richard is also the author of The Ghost Empire, The Book of Roads and Kingdoms, and The Golden Maze. Kari's books include The Sorrow Stone, The Promise of Iceland, Running with Pirates, and The Ash Burner. This has been Rewind, a Radio National production.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listener.